Well, hello, everyone.
Hey, Curtis, how you doing?
Welcome back. I'm doing fantastic. How about you?
I'm doing great. It's a great day.
You know, the clouds rolled into Camarillo about, I don't know, 10 o'clock this morning. It was a bright, sunshiny day, and all of a sudden it was socked in with clouds. And as I'm driving in to Ventura, drive out of the clouds, the sunset just comes right below the clouds, and it just opened up. And it was one of those things where I was excited to get back into the studio again. The sun was shining. Everything was right in the world.
That's it. And beer was flowing?
Well, yeah. And then I pull into the barrel house and I'm greeted with an idiot, which is a double IPA from Coronado Brewing. And, you know, the night has just continually gotten better and better.
That's a great name for a beer. Everyone likes to order because it's just, give me right, an idiot.
You calling your servers idiots. Yeah, I'll take an idiot.
Yeah, I'll take an idiot.
How about you give me an idiot? Yeah, I wasn't, I just said I'll take the Coronado double IPA because I didn't want to offend anyone when I was doing that. But so
that's a great beer.
It is. You know, that is a hop bomb. I just untapped, checked in on Untapped with that one. And that was my quote, I guess, was hop bomb. There is a lot of hops there. For sure. So, boy, you know, one of the things coming up just this week, just in the last 2 days, I don't think we want to wait on talking about this new beer glass that's coming out.
Oh yeah, you put a picture of it online already.
Right. So
go to
go to our Facebook page, Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis, and you can see a video of who is it? Ken Grossman and Sam Calagione.
Yep.
Talking about it, but you know, I'm a sucker for beer glasses. I don't know about you.
Me too. I love beer glasses. Yeah. I love the fact that all the different styles in the different glasses, and the Belgian beers are awesome. Each brewery has their own glass. Like, that's awesome. And we were in Brussels for like just a couple of days and a couple of years ago, and we went into the Beer Temple, which if anybody ever goes to Brussels, you got to go to this store. It's the best. I guess it's just beer over there. It's not Belgian beer, but it's the best Belgian beer store I've ever been to in my life. And it was in Brussels, and they had every single glass from every single brewery, and it was amazing. And every size of beer, and it was great. It was just like a whole store dedicated to Belgian beer. But that's where I fell in love with the glasses. Like, oh my God, every single brewery has their own glass. A little hard to do at your house or at a bar to have each glass, but it was. But now the IPA glass. I remember Sam Adams came out with a really nice glass a few years ago. That was a cool glass.
Yeah, and it's a solid glass too. It's one of the go-tos that I use when I've got more than, say, a 12-ounce pour to put into it, because it's a fairly good size. It can hold a full-size beer for sure. But this came on the heels this week. I'm working on a beer glass book, actually. And so I was just finishing up the specialty glasses. And I've got a quack glass. I don't know if you've seen the quack glasses
really with, cool, with the little
with the wooden stirrup kind of thing. So I was talking about it, and then this glass comes out, and I'm going, oh, yeah, you know what? I didn't even mention the Sam Adams one. And now I've got this new IPA glass that I've got to talk about too. And they do a really great, they do a really great job of explaining why you actually, why the geometries of this glass are so and why it's important for enjoying this beer, for an IPA anyway.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the Sam Adams glass, you look at it and it's all specifically designed. You know, it has the, I think it's called the turbonator or something in the bottom.
Yeah, the nucleation sites
and
down there.
And it's like it hits the thing, and so your bubbles are perfect as they're coming up. Head retention, the way the glass is rounded. This one kind of looks like that glass, but stretched out. It has like a base to it, and then it just goes really up into this kind of tulip shape.
One of the things that I kind of found surprising about it was that the way that you hold onto it, I mean, the ridges on it are not only, they talk about how it knocks these bubbles out and everything else and increasing the aroma, but you're also holding on to it too. And so just the body heat coming from your hand is going to warm up that beer, release that carbon dioxide out too. So you're getting kind of a double whammy on that. Now, I mean, you don't want to nurse this beer because you're going to warm it up.
Right.
But this is actually, you know, gives us an excuse, I guess, to kind of quaff these giant double IPAs.
Exactly.
No, I can't let it sit in my glass. I got to drink this one down. Otherwise, it's going to get, it's going to warm up on me.
Yeah, it's really cool. And so many times when we pour beers, we pour them. Everybody pours at a different, like you have your beer in your fridge. Your fridge is probably 40, 40 something,
like
high 30s, depends what it is. And it's, I just got handed a note right here.
And it's, it's ribbed for everyone's enjoyment.
For everyone's enjoyment. I like that.
Yeah. Not just hers, but all of ours for sure.
I think we're still talking about the glass. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I am.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Right. IPAs. So the ladies love IPAs too.
So many times you, that I'll do the same thing. We'll get a beer and then you put your hands on it. You're warming it up a little. It's a little too cold because with most of us, when we're pouring beer, there's no way we're going to regulate every single beer temperature or zone or, okay, we're going to serve our IPAs at this temperature. So this is great because it's actually encouraging you to warm it up a little.
Right.
And to kind of hold it. But then you're also, you're warming up just the bottom of it. So it's not the whole glass. It's really cool.
Yeah. And I think you hit on a really great point too, is there, you know, more often than not, when somebody hands me a beer, the first thing I do is I cup it in my hands to feel how cold it is. And if it's cold in my hands, I don't want it in, I don't want it numbing my tongue.
Right.
And I just posted a picture of the, yesterday, I think it was, of a frozen beer. So, because I'm writing about beer glasses, and one of the things that just drives me insane is freezer mugs or people who pull their glasses out of the freezer. Please don't do this. You know, it first of all, it ends up freezing your beer. And so, I mean, I took a picture of it on my Facebook page, and I may have shared it on Happy Hour, but if not, it's on Hophead's Head on the Facebook page. But you look at it. I mean, I just poured a small amount of beer into this glass and it totally froze up and then it gushed over and everything else. And so this is one of the reasons why you don't do it, because if you end up freezing your beer, you freeze your tongue and you don't get to taste the beer. So you might as well be drinking a Coors Light if you're going to end up doing something stupid like that.
Well, that's the beer I think of when I think of frozen glasses and schooners. And I don't want to offend anybody, but that's what you think of. You think of, I want my glass as cold as possible.
Ice cold.
Yeah, ice cold. My favorite thing to do is to give somebody a beer, tell them to try it, then tell them to warm it up and wait and see how it changes. And they're just like, I have never thought of drinking a beer not ice cold. And it's like, no, it's true. Mm-hmm. You can drink a beer that's not ice cold. Certain beers, do you want to drink them cold? Pilsners and lagers and stuff, they should be colder. And that's fine. They'll taste really good like that. But most of the time, you should not be drinking it, you know, ice cold, or especially not a frozen glass.
Right, and that's one of the, like, a Tulip is probably my favorite glass. A Snifter is real close. I like the shape of a Snifter, but when you come to a Tulip glass, just being able to hold that the bowl and warm it up, and when once people kind of start to realize that the beer, the taste profile or the flavors change as it warms up, then it opens up a whole new world for them too.
Yeah, it's speaking of, well, this isn't really beer glasses, but I was really happy. We didn't have a show last week, but that was the night where I was able to get my tickets for the Firestone Invitational. Right. We've been talking a lot about this lately, kind of off the air, but
yeah, I think I got mine. When was that? Thanksgiving? I think the first sale went on somewhere in Thanksgiving. They did it in two different rounds.
It kind of sucks that we're talking about it because it's already sold out, but I'm happy that I have mine.
Right. Well, one of the things I think as like a public service announcement we can do for people is to tell them that we actually got an email from Firestone Walker telling us that we are in possession now of some prized merchandise, and that you are going to be, if as soon as people find out that you have these tickets, they are going to want them, and they're going to give you, they're going to offer you all kinds of things. And as I'm talking here, I'm going to pull up the email because it was a fairly interesting email about how, what does it say? We want to, whatever it is, but they just don't even, you know, they're going to be bartering, you know, people are going to offer you things and don't do it. But the other important thing was, and especially talking to a friend over at Barrel House Paul, and he was talking about how, you know, after the first hour, all you're going to be doing is drinking 14% beers.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool.
And then, so whoever you invite, so like I bought two tickets, you bought four tickets. Whoever we invite, we have to make sure that these people can handle some serious beer, because there's no way that they're going to make it through. Plus, it's going to be in Paso, and it's going to be under the sun, yeah, and it's going to be freaking hot.
It's
and,
like you the know, first weekend in June, so
it's going to be something for us.
Sounds like a good time.
Well, no, I'm looking forward to it, but you know, for the regular folk, I don't know. I fancy myself I fancy myself a beer drinker, and I think I'll be able to handle it. But by the end of that day, I'm sure I'm gonna be full.
Yeah, one of the things that's really unusual or unique about this event is it's an invitational beer festival. It's probably the only one around here that's even called that. And what that means for us, for layman's terms, is the head brewer has invited a lot of his friends from out of state and out of the country. We were talking about there's some Belgian brewers coming and bringing their beer. So these are beers you can't even get over here. It's beers that you see on the top 100 list, beers that you see on Beer Advocate and all these things that we just don't, they don't sell them in California. So that's what's really cool. I mean, that's the reason, that is the number one reason to go to this event.
Right. So you've got, do you have a list there in front of you?
I know on Facebook they have the list,
I
but
was just thinking of one of them, which is Three Floyds,
Three Floyds.
Dark Lord. And, whenever that comes out, what is that called? Their Black Tuesday? No, the Black Tuesday is the brewery. What
Dark
is
Lord.
Dark Lord?
They have Dark
But
Lord Day.
what is, it's Dark Lord Day.
Dark
There we go.
Lord Day.
Okay. So whenever that is, those tickets, when they sell the tickets for that's another one of those things where people will buy their tickets and then go around and turn around and try and sell them again, and or they'll just go to the brewery. They'll pick up their beer, whatever it is, three, four bottles that they get to buy, and then turn around and try and sell them on eBay for $200 or $300 a pop. Just some
Yeah.
crazy stuff going on.
I mean, I've seen pictures and videos of the party just to get into the Dark Lord Day. It seems to be like an incredible party. Like you could go there and not even have tickets to get into Dark Lord Day and probably have a great time. I mean, bottle shares and all these things going on outside before people even get inside the brewery.
Right, so you can bet that there'll be plenty of Facebook or Twitter updates from Joby and I as we make our way around and through, and not only that, but I mean we heard that there's all kinds of food that's going to be there too.
Yeah, there's
So
like over 15 restaurants. So it's really cool. It's just a great event, good cause. And like I said, the invitational part of it is just what really attracted me, especially hearing about it from people that went last year. So it's like, I'm not missing it this year. That's not going to happen. But that's coming up in June. That's going to be really exciting.
yeah,
I don't know.
you were just at the Barrel House not too long ago.
We're at Barrel Works.
Oh, the Barrel Works,
That
that's what
is
I meant, yeah.
awesome. That is an awesome place. Actually, I can't wait to go back up there and try some of their. Try some of the barrel aged stuff. I think we were talking about it, but their plan of getting you to blend your own stuff, I think is a fascinating concept where you have all these barrel aged beers on tap and then you can request a percentage, like let me have 50% of this, 25 of, Little Opal or I can't even remember some of the name of their barrel aged stuff, but you could blend your own beer and then have a glass of it or have a growler of it, which if they do that, it's going to be really exciting.
Yeah, it sounds it when I was there just a few weeks before they opened, and so I got a kind of a walkthrough tour, but sadly no tasting. But it was my first time in the Bealeton, what is it, the pub there, the tap room,
Tap room.
and that was it was a fantastic. I mean, the food was great, the beers are good, fantastic, and the company certainly was on top with all that too. So
I'm
this
staring at
evening,
someone right here who's ready to get on.
yeah, tonight we've got Kevin Pratt. He's the brewmaster from Santa Barbara Brewing Company in Santa Barbara, and
Funny how that works.
right, I
Yeah.
know it's and this is his story, or the Santa Barbara Brewing Company story for him is pretty great. And Santa Barbara Brewing Company was one of the first brew pubs I went to as I went traveling through, as I went up to just exploring California when I first moved to Camarillo. And I remember stopping in there, and what Kevin has done there has been a really great thing. And it's so nice to be able to go down State Street now, sit there and do some just wonderful people watching, but then be wowed by the beers that are there too. So, I mean, the only thing that's better than watching whatever happens on
Sounds like a
State
cool
Street.
place. Where is this again?
Whatever happens on,
It's not anything I'm familiar with.
well, that's because you're in the back working all day long.
That's
You
true.
don't get to sit in the front window and watch what happens. So we've got Kevin coming up.
Yeah.
Kevin, I mean, just in himself, he's got this great story too. But just for anyone who thinks, should I stick around? Kevin is the second highest rated beer judge, BJCP beer judge in the U.S. So When we're talking palettes,
in the world.
Oh, there you go. In the world,
we got to find this number one guy and take him out.
Right, I know.
This is ridiculous.
Right, Kevin,
you can't take Gordo.
I was going to say,
we need Gordo. Gordo does too much good.
I was going to say, Kevin knows who that is for sure. But he's going to tell us about the story when we come up, and then also, you know, we've got some. I kind of want to know about when we're drinking a beer, say out of a clear, when I get a Corona, why would I stick a lime in it? Well, I think I kind of know why I'm going to stick something in that, just to cover up my beer taste. But anyway, so I mean, just some casual sort of off flavor conversations down the road too.
Yeah, so we'll be right back after the break on Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
This is VC My Buzz Radio. I was going to say VC Buzz for a second, but My Buzz Radio, and we'll catch you in a couple minutes.
I like beer.
Okay.
So, conversation of what rating is our show? I always kind of figured it as a PG-13, maybe a high PG-13.
I just want to know how often I get
it. NC-17. No, that's too high.
Yeah, we don't have the button to race across the room, like the
no delay.
The delay button. Like, so but we don't have to worry about that, because
6 months from now people are still hearing me real time.
Right.
This could get dangerous.
So welcome back. You're listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis. We are broadcasting out of the My Buzz Radio Studios here in beautiful downtown Ventura. We're right next door to the
Majestic,
theater.
The Majestic.
And at some point, there's going to be a concert over there, and then we're
going
to hear it.
Yeah, what's going on with the Thursday night concerts?
Right, come on. I mean, we'll figure at some point. Let's get back. I guess we got sidetracked there. Oh, you're just turning up my headphones there.
I'm messing around with buttons over there.
That's all right, Kevin. So make yourself at home.
Once a sound man, always a sound man.
There we go. I had to turn mine down a little bit. Sorry. We got Kevin Pratt from Santa Barbara Brewing Company here. And Kevin, you know, you weren't always a brewer.
No.
So what?
I was once a small child.
Sounds like you were a sound man also at one time.
I was.
So lead us kind of through. How did you get from sound engineer roadie with who was it? Rat? Who were you with? Motley Crue?
I worked for a sound vendor that rented sound systems to a lot of main stage acts, and so I did a whole lot of 80s hair band stuff and a few bands that are still around. I mean, I started off doing bands that you only heard of if you were really into the 80s scene at the time.
Mm.
Which wasn't many of us. And then, you know, I mean, MC 900 Foot Jesus and shit. So
MC 900 Foot Jesus.
Yeah, I don't know exactly. That. It's like, who? Yeah. Then moved on up to some much better acts. The first act I really kind of got in with was Romeo Void for that, which was a two-hit wonder. And she's still a pretty good blues singer. So, then from there went into other main stage acts and ended up falling into the good graces of a great road manager, and did a whole lot of heavy metal, of like Judas Priest and Metallica and AC/DC and, you know, other emerging bands at the time, like Rob Zombie, you know, White Zombie at the time. And, you know, but my job was the sound system, not the band. I wasn't really with the band. I was with the system. So I made the boom come out of the box. If it was loud, then I did my job.
So you're spending a lot of time on the road. You come back home, and you're just sitting there twiddling your thumbs. And
well, a guy I worked with, a guy that was actually one of my employees, brought me a homebrew beer for the first time. And this was 1986. Brought me a homebrew beer, and my first question was just at the time, like everybody else's first question, which is, A, is this legal? And B, is this going to kill me? So, you know, once I found out that it was yes and no in that order, not the other way around, I tried it and it was delicious and I was hooked, and went out and got myself the best brewing book I could at the time, read it 3 times from cover to cover, went out and got the best ingredients I could at the time, which weren't really all that good in hindsight, and proceeded to make my first beer I was also, of course, coming from an arts background, a very creative type. So I thought, well, this is a brown ale. What else goes really good with it? What else do I like? Oh, I like a little maple syrup. Hey, you know what? And strawberries are in season. And, you know, a little. So I read all this kind of stuff. I added all these things. And I made a beer that was life-shatteringly bad.
This is the first beer you ever made?
First beer I made. You know, I mean, you really know you're in trouble when your mom is really thrilled that she's. Because we had discovered Hoegaarden, you know, it was a whole new world at that time. And you know, my quest for beer, I was frustrated because I found out about Michelob Dark, and I could not for the life of me figure out how it tasted any different than Michelob. And it didn't.
Michelob Dark.
It was just Michelob with caramel coloring. And so we made this, and Hoegaarden was a magic at the time, and your mom grabs a six-pack of your freshly made beer and then doesn't call you for a month, you tend to worry about what's going on. Call her, and she says, I don't know. I might be allergic to yeast. I just don't know. No, that was not a good. So I redoubled my effort, went out, got new ingredients from the same place. They weren't actually new. They were the same ingredients they had 6 months earlier. And tried to make another beer, and it was equally as bad.
Did you create these recipes?
I was actually following recipes out of this book, but I was also following other advice out of this book about sanitation and that kind of thing, and thinking of, you know, and I realized that, all right, well, what can sanitize the most? Hey, bleach. I'm going to use bleach, lots of it. yeah, and so actually my problem, as it turns out, my third beer I took, I went into... a pub, the brew pub that we had, the world famous now Rubicon Brewing Company in Sacramento.
All right.
Met the brewer there at the time and said, I, you know, making beer for myself. He goes, oh, you should come to our homebrew meeting. I asked where it was, and he said it was at a VFW hall. It turned out to be 2 blocks from where I was living, 2 blocks from the house. And I said, I can walk there. And he goes, good. We recommend that. So I learned then by bringing that beer in from a community of other brewers what my problem was, number one. And the next beer turned out to be merely awful, but drinkable and improved and continued to improve and got better equipment and got better books and got better information.
Yeah.
And it is the same truism that is now is that it's the community of brewers that teach each other, not so much any single resource. And that has been my hallmark all the way into professional brewing. The same thing is true with other professional brewers. If you know what you're doing, if you've got the basics down, you can get a lot of information from your own brewing community. And that's right now, that's the most important thing.
So you were definitely hooked right away.
I was. I was hooked on the fact that I couldn't get it right.
Right.
I read in that book, they were talking all about Ninkasi and making beer 6,000 years ago and the Egyptians. And I'm thinking, damn it, this is the 80s. I can do this.
But they never said the beer tasted good back then.
Right.
Nobody
knows what it tasted like. So
I'm pretty sure Sam Calagione doesn't know what the beer tasted like, but he's making it. He's right. Doing stuff like that. God bless him.
Yeah, we know they made it, but we don't know if it was any good.
Right. No, there was a historic series by a relatively major brewer in about that time. Sam Adams came out with an entire line in the late 80s, early 90s, an entire line of beer that they called from original recipes from the 1700s and the early 1800s from founding fathers.
Oh, wow.
And they were stuck with a conundrum once they tasted it. They were stuck with a conundrum. Do we do this as historically accurate? Or do we change this and make it taste good? Which tells you exactly what happened.
Right.
They put it out as historically accurate, which was pretty damn ballsy.
Right.
I would have guessed that they went the other way.
They would have changed it up to make it taste good.
They decided to be authentic. They decided to be to basically, you know, put it out there of, okay, we didn't create these recipes, we recreated these recipes. Mm-hmm. We brought them forward. This is what they were drinking. And this is how far we've come. You know, great beer, as we know it, is not that old. Most of the beers we think are these long heritage styles are 20th century, maybe late 19th century inventions. dry stout, something we hold near and dear, Guinness, is post-World War II. Mm. You know, the history of styles, our memory, our collective memory as a society of historic styles is very, very short. It's pretty much the lifespan of our creative industry, which only goes back 30 years.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Anything before that, we didn't really have tasteable examples of. And so there's a whole secondary layer of brewing that's going on right now that is not only exploring the new thing, but they're exploring a lot of the old things, some of the truly old things. So we're getting Gose back. We're getting Grätzer back. We're getting these styles that are completely extinct, not just the Witbier, which was almost extinct, but we're getting truly extinct beers coming back that exist beyond just the homebrew level. And that was one of the main things about homebrewing is that we were trying to preserve what we considered historic styles. And in some cases, we got it profoundly wrong. But in a lot of cases, we got the flavors down to something that were profoundly right for that period of time. We may have gotten some of the ideas, some of the actual technical issues really wrong. But we got the flavors mostly right.
So you move from roadie to homebrewer. You're still doing some roadie stuff in between homebrewing.
Well, I moved out of roadie. I mean, roadieing is a young man's game. And by the time you're about 35, you're a little too old for a lot of that stuff, unless you're going to move into management. And I moved into radio. I moved in as a radio engineer. I worked for several radio stations in Sacramento, which was where I considered home. I grew up in the South Bay area to begin with, San Jose, Saratoga area, and moved to Sacramento because I liked it. It was a touch of the Midwest in California, and that was my base of operation. Worked for radio stations in Sacramento, and then worked and at the time there was no such thing as the internet. There was only, you know, the ability to memorize things. And having been around the time, I was known as Kevin, the big-brained engineer, because I was a font of trivia. I still am. Next thing I did is I worked for a television company that provided satellite uplink services around the world for news corporations. And so I did a lot of traveling, saw an awful lot of fairly important events in the U.S. that still haunt us today, and things that kind of other things people really don't want to see. But the main difference being the radio, when you come along, everybody wants to know what you're giving away. Right. You know, and who's showing up because it's your favorite radio station, and you show up in a TV truck, and everybody wants to know who's guilty.
So what's going on?
It was around 2000. I looked around and thought, 1999, 2000, I looked around and thought, well, I can't do this forever. I'm not a desk guy. What can I do that's fairly active that I know something about? And I thought, I can cook. So sent myself to culinary school. And then worked in kitchens for a couple of years and realized I hated that. And thought, well, what else can I do? Oh, well, there's this beer thing I've been doing for a long time. May as well get serious about that. And actually, I had already been a partner in a small, very small brewing operation in 1994. I got my first paycheck doing that as the brewer for a little tiny distribution and brewing company. We had 36 accounts. We were very happy. It lasted about 6 years. And I thought, well, in 2001, I thought, well, I should do that full time. Yeah. So that's what I've been doing since.
So were you, as you're traveling, as you're doing the new thing, are you trying beers? Are you
when you're traveling the world as a roadie, you're basically, you've got two problems. One, you can say you visited a city, but basically you're visiting the stadium of a city, right, which is usually in an area just slightly better than the rail yards. Right. And it's indoors.
Right,
and
right.
15,000 seats in San Francisco looks like 15,000 seats in Stuttgart.
Right.
And only you only know you're in a different place because of the accents of the locals. the local hands that are helping you out. And pretty much what beer you have is whatever's on the rider, and the rider usually specifies whatever the band wants, right, which is usually not that great.
Right. So you're not exploring a city. You're just pulling in, doing the show, and getting out.
You're pulling in at 7 o'clock in the morning. You're doing a show. You're set up by 4 o'clock. Sound check happens at 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock. You're having a meal. You run out to the bus. You get some sleep. You get it back in at 11:30 at night, and you tear down till 3 in the morning. Then you ride the bus until you get to the next city.
Next spot, do it all over again.
And yeah, and you know the object is to try to stay awake, and all of the various pharmaceutical techniques doing that come into play.
So are you trying stuff at home, or
were you honing your towards beer? The end of that roadie stuff in 1988 is when I started home brewing, and towards the end of that roadie stuff, that's when I really started doing it. And when my kids started growing up, that was when it became important, was to have something to do. It wasn't that I was making beer with the kids, but that they liked to help, that they liked the equipment and creativity and stuff out there, and we would actually make homemade root beer from scratch as well. So I had my two taps at my height, and I had one more tap that was down at their height. Nice. And we would make that, and I wouldn't make it easy. It wasn't like Dad just made the beer. It was, well, if it ran out, then they got to do it, and they had to shake the keg. They had to add the extract. They had to stir the pot. They, you know, they didn't handle the hot stuff. I didn't make them do anything dangerous, but they had to shake the kegs to carbonate it. So there was work involved in that. And so, you know, the first keg went really fast. And then the second keg, I actually heard my daughter wondering if one of her friends was a little bit too much of a lush. She drank a little bit too much, and Seinfeld was on, and she said, "I wonder if she's root beer worthy."
So you end up, you come to Santa Barbara. How do you get here? I mean, how do you, so?
By train. Just really kind of easy.
Just like that. So you're doing consulting kinds of things. You come down to Santa Barbara, and so take us through kind of Santa Barbara.
I worked in several breweries. I worked in some production breweries. Worked in an organic brewery. Learned a lot about making beer with not very many ingredients from working in organic. There's not that many malts available. And so, you know, one of the truisms of even homebrewing was I found out my best beers were two malts and two hops. And it turns out that that is the same even in commercial brewing. The simpler and the more you accent the one flavor you think is the most important, the more complex the beer seems to turn out. Rather than trying to do multiple things in there, which just become messed up. A melange. And ultimately, I found myself trying to start breweries with people. The recession hit in 2007. People were making a lot of promises, wanted to get into the business. The craft beer industry was growing like crazy, but getting people to write checks was hard, was really difficult, and it just wasn't happening. And after about 2 years of putzing around with that, this job came up. Came up on Craigslist, and I applied and didn't get it the first time around. And then it came up again about 8 months later, and I called, and they said, "Oh, yeah, we still have your resume. We were thinking about calling it, but, man, you're a long ways away." I said, let me come down and audition. Let me come on down and see what I can do for you. I showed up, got there. First thing I did was go look at the brewery and looked at the system, and our system is this wonderful German-inspired system that should be fairly straightforward that I've used them before. And this thing had been completely reworked and torn apart, and it was nothing like German engineering. There was nothing straightforward about it. There was nothing streamlined about it. And so I dove in underneath the platform, got myself into that little crawl space, started taking things apart in there and, you know, putting it back together the way I knew it was supposed to be put together. And in fact, making a few changes along the line. And as I did it during the day, there was a bigger and bigger pile of stainless pipes and clamps and gaskets hanging up outside this brewery. And I met the chef, came over and leaned down and goes, "Hey, how you doing? You are a new brewer?" I said, "No, I'm just a consultant today. I don't know." And he goes, "Huh, so you're going to make all the changes to this?" "Yep." And I said, "Yep." this is gonna be awesome, or we're going down in flames. And you know, luckily it's turned out to be pretty awesome.
Yeah,
I learned very quickly that he had also been making a lot of changes to the menu. That he had really brought up the quality of the food, brought up the freshness of the food, and made the place very, very appealing. And I was offered, within that first day, I was offered a job, and we did some negotiating, and I did some looking around to see what was going on in Santa Barbara, and I saw Telegraph, which is doing a great job with very eclectic beers, went over to Brew House, and there was a solid lineup over there, and I thought, all right, this town has some flavor, some sense of enjoying really good beer. I can do stuff here. I can do fine. Yeah. And, you know, we talked about it after a couple of days, came to an agreement, and here I am. So the job chose me.
Well, and you're, I mean, after the job chose you, then you spent another, 2 weeks tearing the brew system apart, yeah, and rebuilding.
Then then the job started. So yeah, I did that, you know, in that first day. That actually took me about 4 days to completely rebuild it. I after 2 days, I put it together good enough. I knew I could make a beer out of it, out of the system, and went in to run it. Everything was going great until I got to the point where I had to do a boil, and I couldn't get the kettle to get above 208 degrees. It couldn't actually boil. Mm-hmm. It just sort of did this very sort of sultry simmer thing. And I realized, oh, well, there's a problem with the boiler. There's a problem with some other stuff here. That was, and the beer I was making was the blonde. And incidentally, when I had gotten there, the previous brewer had gone away with all of the recipes, or at least there were no recipes to be found. You know, so however that happened, there was nothing, no record of what had gone before. And so I was making this stuff up. So I made, you know, just a normal hip pocket brown, which is essentially a pale ale on training wheels. And I hate making beers that are on training wheels. I couldn't get it to boil, and that was a long night. We figured out how to get just enough steam, I figured out how to get enough steam. I always use the Royal We because I like to think of brewing as a team rather than an individual sport. But at the time, it was just me, and simply removed enough of the wort to make it hit when I used the whirlpool, make it hit the sidewall so that it boiled off the sidewall, and created some bitterness out of the hops and created a beer, and did that twice and filled it up. But okay, now I got to fix the boiler. That was another week of fixing of stuff. The very next beer, now that I had finished that, for any brewers out there, brewing efficiency or malt efficiency is how much sugar you get out of the grain. And there's a theoretical maximum, and there's an amount that you want to get out of it without getting stuff that you don't want, because there's a lot of stuff that's soluble in water. And we got some notes I had indicated that they were getting about 65-70% out of the malt, and that proved true on that first blonde. So I created a recipe. The next thing I needed to make was an IPA. Created a recipe for that with enough malt for that 65-70%. Well, it turns out the steam improvements and the piping improvements and the rest of it turned my efficiency from 70% to 91%. So had a significantly higher amount of sugar coming out of this. And what started off at nearly 30% sugar, by the time I had a full kettle, was still about 14% sugar, where it's usually about one or two when you finish. Mm-hmm. So I had a barley wine on my hands. And this wasn't going to be any kind of a barley wine you'd want to have. It'd be more like a Dogfish 120 or something. It's very barley wine-like, very vinous, and the hop character just doesn't really carry through. So I, on the fly, changed the hopping to an American barley wine, or like a Bigfoot kind of a thing. And that became old recollection. We let that age. It turned out to be about 13% by the time we were done. And we let that age on bourbon oak chips for a while, and we continued to bring it out. So this year we had the a year-old version of Old Recollection, which we spell with a W. So Old Recollection with a W in front of it, all rec. That I hope to have out for the next 2 or 3 years, a little bit at a time. And it's just kind of this nice little homage to where we started, how we improved it, and that beer is aging beautifully.
That's awesome. I mean, out of a tragedy comes a great beer, or as you're fixing the system.
Well, there's no such thing as a perfect brew session.
Right.
You know, even automated systems, something goes wrong. And so it's never what goes wrong, it's how you recover.
I think some of the best beers come out of mistakes, as personally, especially in home brewing. And then you're trying to, and then you're trying to make it again, which is always the hardest part.
Well, Lagunitas Brown Sugar,
yeah,
is a classic example of a mistake brew. I mean, they had a problem with it, and they added brown sugar to fix it. And luckily, the brewers made good enough notes that they could reproduce it.
Yeah.
So brown sugar comes out every year, and it was a mistake. It was, well, can't say it's a mistake. If it turns out well, yeah, and you can drink it, it's not a mistake. It just wasn't planned. It's
what they were like planning on.
Yeah, it's like telling a small, you know, a child, you're not really a mistake, but we weren't planning on that.
Well, we've been listening and talking to Kevin Pratt from Santa Barbara Brewing Company, and just telling us about what it takes to come into a place where the brew system is a total mess, and then what it's taken to get there. And that's one of the, I think, on the other side of the story. For a drinker, when the first time that I was there, the beers were just kind of dull and there wasn't anything there, really. And then just kind of through, I don't even know, Twitter, Facebook, something, I don't know, and I saw Kevin was going over to Santa Barbara Brewing. And then, you know, the first beers I had after he was there, just these bright beers full of life. And it was so nice to that there was some good beer again, you know, and it's always sad when you go into a brew pub and this is, you know, you get something that's just not drinkable. But then to turn it around, and we talked a little bit earlier about how you're trying to get over that bump, and now you've been there for almost 2 years, and now people are coming back around and going, oh yeah, I heard you were there, and I wanted to stop in, you know, as soon as I saw it. But
yeah, you get a lot of, hey, I heard you've been making good beer the last couple of months. I think I should show up and try it.
Right.
I've been there 2 years. Oh, really? Because I didn't think it was that long.
Right. Well, time does fly.
Time flies.
Yeah, it does.
So when we come back, we'll talk about some of the new stuff that you're making, Kevin, and we'll do our last call.
Sounds good. I got a couple good beers.
Awesome.
All right. We'll catch you in just a few minutes then.
We'll lead in with that then. The glamorous life of a brewer.
Hey,
there's glamour,
and we are back.
I was told there were roadies. There were groupies.
We're back at
there's no roadies.
My Buzz Radio, and my appearance anyway is brought to you in part by We're Driving. We'redriving.com is a personal driving service. It's so great. They come and pick me up. Generally, I'm good and buzzed by the time they come. I meet them at my car. One of the drivers gets in my car, drives me and my car home. They get picked up by a tag-along driver. They come back and they go pick up someone else. It's a great service. So if you're looking for somebody if you're going out and having a good party, good time, whatever it is, go to weirddriving.com, and that's weirddriving.com.
Yeah, well worth the price.
It is.
Way cheaper than a DUI.
Every week, that's how I get home. My family loves me that I'm getting home safe. Everyone around me loves me that I'm driving home, getting home safe too.
The designated driver.
It is the designated driver.
And your car is there when you wake up, which is the best part.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah, no tickets or anything else. So we're here in last call, and we were
giggling about the glamorous life of a brewer.
Glamorous life, yeah. There's no roadies, but there are groupies. They told me there were groupies. They didn't tell me that they all come with facial hair and beer bellies.
I was going to say, there's some sexy groupies, aren't there? Like, wait a second. Well, you're a rock star.
On the plus side, most of them have all their teeth.
That's good. I don't know if that's a plus. I don't know.
What time do you go to work?
I go to work at the very pleasant time of 11 o'clock.
At night.
Yeah. In the mid-90s, there was a very fashionable thing of putting the brewery right behind the bar because then everybody would sort of feel like they're in the environment. I won't say immersed because there's a lot of water involved, but you were in that brewery environment. It was very cool until they realized, oh, crap, it's really hot. And so there's pretty much no breweries of this vintage that operate during the daytime because bartenders don't like getting burned.
Caustic.
I mean, they like that even less than not getting tipped. So, you know, it's really kind of a bad thing. Plus, it's noisy. Plus, there are aromas. Plus, there are the noises from the pumps and that kind of thing. And if you're trying to enjoy a game and some guy's going, where's my hops? And, you know, boil over, you know. There's just something magical about, you know, hitting somebody with 200 degree water that says owner transfer. So we have to work when nobody else is around. And we tend to get done by the time we open. We're done usually by about 9 o'clock in the morning. And my brewing process is fairly meticulous. I have a set way in which I make wort for all of my beers, and I build flavor through grain and hops. And let the process be its one thing, and that's how I get as much out of the grain as I can. I could go shorter, but that would not be fair to my owners. I wouldn't be getting as much out of the grain, so the beers would cost a little bit more. And I'm a pretty big stickler on doing the best I can from beginning to end. So, you know, there is a way in which I can make beer in 6 hours or so, 5 or 6 hours, but it wouldn't be as good. Wouldn't be as rich. It wouldn't be the same thing.
Right. So, and speaking of your owners, how much control do you have? We try to ask all our brewers that. I mean,
control's an interesting issue.
Recipes.
Ultimately, I don't care who the brewer is. Ultimately, the owners control everything.
Of course.
That it's their money. It's their risk. A responsible brewer is going to make beer in line with what the owner's goals are, whatever that may be. And if they've got the freedom to be very experimental, then that's an ideal situation for a brewer because we want to be very creative. I have seven stable beers that are on all the time. And then I introduce, and this is purely my own creativity, I introduce a new specialty every single month. I have the freedom to make some of those high-gravity beers for winter. The long aging beers, that kind of thing, that takes up tank space, and I need that tank space. So regardless of what I want to do, I still have to meet production needs. I have to make the beer. People want to come in and try that beer, and if it's not on tap, they don't, you know, they don't get to taste it that day, and I'm the one that loses. Right. So, you know, because I lose for two reasons. One, hey, they're not going to spend the money, and two, I look like a doofus because I can't keep it on tap. So, you know, priority one is keeping that going and keeping the quality up as I'm doing it. And then within that range, I get to play. And I'm very lucky in that I like to make extremely balanced beers. In fact, that's kind of a hallmark of my style is I make balanced beer. And these guys that can make these really aggressively hoppy, gritty, lovely beers to drink, that's just not... I can work my butt off to try to make a beer that's out of balance, like my double IPA, and yet it still comes out extremely balanced. That's just how I make beer.
Yeah, there's something to be said for a well-balanced beer, though.
IPA is every bit as hoppy as anything else you would have. Yeah, it'll make you hit like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of that's the sound it makes in my head. So, you know, it's every bit as hoppy as any other, but it doesn't have that resinous, gritty finish to it that says, you know, hops for a half hour. It's smoother. It makes you want to have another sip.
Right. And hopefully another beer because...
Yeah, but they're plenty aromatic, and that's the whole point is, is that if you're going to start a brewing company, if you're going to be a brewer, any doofus can sell the first pint. It's the second pint that matters.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, so, and I have to make beer that is something my bartenders and servers can sell, because once I'm done with it, once I put it in the tanks, they're my sales force.
Right.
And I could be sitting next to somebody asking a whole bunch of questions, and I will not jump in. I'll let my bartender or let my server answer those questions, because it's their job.
Right.
That's what they do, and it's kind of rude to just jump in and start, you know, taking over that for them. It's very pretentious of me to do it. But
unless
they
give
ask,
you the signal, yeah.
If they
give
ask,
you the signal,
and every one of them knows if somebody really is asking them questions, bring me in. I will talk to them. I'll talk to anybody that wants to talk to me. Is a brewer around? Yes. Go get them. I'll come out.
Yeah. So can we find you there past 9 o'clock?
Many times I'm there till about 2.
Okay.
Then I try to get home and get some sleep. We'll be back at 11.
Back at night. So obviously you guys are in Santa Barbara. You're on State Street.
We're on State Street. State and Haley.
State and Haley.
In the thick of the party zone.
Oh, it is. Right. It's a great place.
And one of the things I love best about it too is that if you take the train, you're 2 blocks, 3 blocks down. I mean, so you get off at the train, you go get, you walk down, have a bunch of beer.
And
get back on the train.
Great
and food. And food. Get back on the train, come home. It's a win-win all the way around, for sure. So if you want to learn more about Santa Barbara Brewing Company, go to it's
sbbrewco.com,
and you'll see the their list of beers. And when Kevin's talking about a well-balanced beer, I love the blonde. Does that rotate every once in a while? Sometimes it's a Kolsch, and sometimes...
No, it's always an export pilsner.
Okay, so it's
one of the first changes I made.
And it's a fantastic beer. I love that. I love to have that with the Ahi tuna wrap. Is that still on the menu?
Of course.
With the wasabi and everything in there, that is just those two things. For me, I love that combination. It's a fantastic combination. So we're looking at coming up for the next couple weeks here on the schedule. Next week is Valentine's Day, so we should all be spending it with the ones we love. And I'm not going to be here, for sure. So that's an off week, but we'll be back on February 21st with Festival Barrel House. And this is a brand new nano brewery. They should be getting their license anytime, if they haven't already, out of Moore Park.
Yep.
And then after that, we start getting into some hard stuff. We've got Refined Distillery coming out of Paso Robles. They use... grapes, and they're doing all kinds of stuff. So I don't know what they're bringing in. They've got brandy, they have gin, they have vodka. And so we've got them scheduled for 3 different times. So whatever they're bringing in a couple weeks, that's what
they have enough stuff to cover 3 shows. So
yeah.
It should be good.
So I'm so stoked to get some hard alcohol kind of knowledge going on.
Definitely we'll be using Word Driving that night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I'll be using them too.
And then after that one, we've got March.
Be in the corner.
And
just waiting.
And in March 7th,
we'll be doing our
public service announcement for the year.
I can't wait for that. Actually.
We're gonna have Captain Don Aguilar from the Ventura Police Force coming in, and Ventura County Deputy, and he will be in, and he's going to be giving us breathalyzers
as we go along.
So
the show.
We're gonna start, and we're gonna keep going and going and going, because I don't think people and. I mean, I've done this plenty of times now, so I know how buzzed I can get in an hour on this show. But I don't think people realize how, and I mean, we're generally drinking a fairly hefty beer.
Yeah.
I don't think people realize how drunk they can get just in 1 hour. And you get in your car, you get pulled over, that's bad news all the way around.
So we're going to be the guinea pigs.
Oh, yeah. And I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to put my best
Kevin,
foot
you're welcome
forward.
To come back for that show.
Right, March 7th.
I would like to get the cop drunk. Can I get the cop drunk?
No,
I don't know if he's drinking.
That's not going to happen.
Really?
It's us two.
I believe he can radio for a driver.
Right, he might be able to. So that's going to be...
I'm pretty sure of it.
That's going to be in preparation...
I can see him go home on a motorcycle.
That's going to be in preparation for St. Patrick's Day, so that you
a
know...
A big drinking holiday,
you know how to stay safe.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
Kevin, thank you so much for
you're
being
welcome.
Here.
Santa Barbara Brewing Company, go check it out. Great beers.
Yeah.
And Joby, it's been great.
It's been awesome, Curtis.
Happy
hour with Joby and Curtis. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks.
Sounds good.
We should have the pop.
I would rather be sloppy drunk.